League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 11th of September, which means it is Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day live with you until 12 o'clock today. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. Facebook page, if you wish to leave a post, Talk Radio Europe official. And you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. First coffee of the day kicking in there. On today's show, we're going to be speaking and talking about the situation in Barcelona and Catalonia. We're going to be looking at the latest news with the shy and retiring ex-Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson. Theresa May's Brexit strategy. Is there one what now for the Labour Party? The fallout from the op-ed that appeared in the New York Times and how well President Trump has handled it. The reaction to the election results in Sweden as well, and if we've got time, a myriad of other topics. Joining me live in the studio, Andres Gallardo. Andres, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. And back again. Ready to rock and roll.
Lots of politics this week.
Lots of politics. Alf Brewer is with us. Charlie Mullins is on the way. We've had calls in from his people here somewhere. Charlie, if you're listening, we look forward to your presence any minute now in the Viewpoint studio. 952-784-4000, the phone number. Studio at tre.radio, the email, Facebook page, Talk Radio Official, and you can WhatsApp me on Get It Right This Time, +34 645 99 67 95. Thank you, Alf. Right then, looking at the front page of the papers, though, today. The EU's chief negotiator's upbeat tone on the possibility of an imminent Brexit deal makes a number of today's front pages in the UK. Michel Barnier switches his demeanour as easily as an actor in an ancient Greece, swapping between the masks of tragedy and comedy, says Daily Express. Meanwhile, the I paper reports that Mr. Barnier's comments triggered a rise in the value of the pound and that a Save Theresa operation has been launched by European leaders amid fears that Boris Johnson is after her job. Mr. Johnson continues to get column inches, with the Mirror describing him as a selfish, egotistical maniac whose poisonous personal vanity is creating a major roadblock to a decent Brexit deal for Britain. Selfish, egotistical maniac. There you go, whose poisonous personal vanity. That's what the Mirror decides. Writing the Times, Rachel Sylvester says the announcement that Boris Johnson is getting divorced is irrelevant to those beyond his family. What matters, she says, is the amorality of his politics. There are pictures aplenty of a smiling Alistair Cook on the front and back pages of many of today's papers. Cook, who notched up 147 runs in his final test innings against India at the Oval, exudes professionalism and quiet charm, according to the Daily Mail. Describing Cook as a devoted family man who eschews the boozy nightclub culture enjoyed by some of his colleagues, it asks, could there be a better role model than this record-breaking batsman? Also looking, it may be used to be associated with casseroles and bingo, but Labour, Alf, is now seen as the party of quinoa, I hope I said that correctly, and student protests. That's according to a study of swing votes in marginal constituencies detailed in The Guardian. If only we had the webcam going. The research stressed that many voters have gone from viewing Labour as the pie and pint party of the working classes to students at demos. A balance of just 17% said the party was good at representing traditional Labour values. The article does note, however, that Labour has a membership of more than half a million. We'll come on to that in a minute. The Guardian says women in the UK are living shorter lives on average than most of their counterparts in Europe, citing a detailed analysis of the health of the nation by Public Health England. It says the average lifespan of the British woman is 83, taking 17th place out of 28 European nations. Men in the UK do better, in 10th place, and with an above average life expectancy of 79.4 years. But the Times points out that dementia, already the biggest killer of women, will soon take just as great a toll on men. In its lead editorial, The Express says it's obscene that in a country as rich as ours, we have seen such appalling health problems coming down the line. It says if we don't act on these warnings, there's a health time bomb waiting to go off. And finally, The Telegraph has published a list of street slang compiled by police in Lancashire to help their neighbourhood officers understand the terms and phrases used by teenagers. So if you have a teenager, please listen in. It states that beefting fam means starting an argument, whilst peng means good or attractive. Wagwan is short for hello, how are you? And swear down means tell the truth. The list also points that Stormzy, who's appearing in Gibraltar later this month, is a rapper from South London and not a metrological term. So there you go. And those are your headlines today. Looking a little bit Stormzy out, don't you think? Today, the 11th of September. Right then, let's start off then with, as we should do, let's go word to the Labour Party. I'll come to you, Andres, with the Barcelona in after this, but I think we'll start off a little bit about where Labour go, because Labour have been making the front pages with the thought that there could be a new Labour. Daily Telegraph making claims that a journalist has been shouted down and a vote of no confidence been infiltrated by Iranian TV. Alf, what's going on in the Labour Party at the moment?
Well, it's a mess. It's a mess for one reason. It's because there's little or no direction, and it's about how is the party going to turn itself around in order to become electable. The latest issue was Chuka Amana, who said, you know, back off Colby and get your dogs to back off, because otherwise you're going to destroy whatever we're going. The interesting point, though, and it's very quiet, what not really been mentioned is that they've just had the elections for the new NEC. Well, there were 9 seats up for grabs. Momentum-backed candidates won all 9 seats, so they're hardening up, they're firming up on control of the party. It's becoming, you know, centric around Momentum. Is that going to drive people away? They can claim, 500,000 members. I know enough of the people around me who are saying, no, I'm not rejoining. I'm not paying me money again this year. I keep on arguing with them because I have a particular point. But what's also fascinating is things like John McDonnell comes on and says, Amali, you shouldn't be saying this stuff. You should be getting behind the party, which is rich coming from someone who, when we were in power, didn't always support the party. In fact, during the Ken Livingstone, I think, second term, when Frank Dobson was the Labour candidate, I was sent from East London, as a volunteer, sent from East London to West London to put garden stakes up in John McDonnell's constituency, because nobody was doing any work for the Labour candidate. Never mind it was Frank Dobson. I think it's rich when people like John McDonnell all of a sudden come along and say, and I've said that about Corbyn as well, you cannot become the leader and say, you've got to support the party. However, I do agree with Corbyn, and it's the issue that sort of is Trumpified as well. If you've got somebody in your organisation who's undermining your position, I wouldn't want them working in my organisation. I said that when Blair was the Prime Minister, when John Smith was the leader, you know, Kinnock. If you're in the cabinet, you're part of the team. You don't want to be part of the team. Go outside. Throw your stones from outside, not inside. And you pick up information, and that's exactly the same with Boris Johnson, you know, on the inside, throwing stones. Get out. You want to have a go? You pop outside, have your fight out in the street. And by the way, as a gutter fighter, I know where the sewer is.
Right, fair enough. I mean, it's not been a good week. Andres, have you got any thoughts on where the party stands at the moment?
I think when you started saying, you see, moving to new Labour, I think that the party's moved so much to the left that they've left behind the majority of the voters in the country, where most of the voter classes, and they're the centre-right, centre-left, and they have deserted that position, and they are making themselves, in my view, unelectable. So a reshuffle and moving towards the centre ground of the politics would be something positive for Labour, but that's not going to happen while Jeremy Corbyn is the leader. That's my take on this one.
Yeah, it will, but he won't be doing the moving. Yeah, I lived through this when Michael Foot was the leader and we had the worst years ever as a Labour Party. People come together eventually and say, you know, people forget what the Labour Party was set up for. The Labour Party was an organisation that was there trying to achieve change for people. It wasn't a group, and there wasn't millions of people. It wasn't about the policies. It wasn't about being in opposition. It wasn't about any of that. It was called, how do you win power? Because it's only when you get power that you can achieve change. And a group of people got together to say, we need to gain power. And that's exactly where we are today. So, and it's a shame because I hear the youngsters saying, oh, I really like Corbyn's policies. I hear some of the older folk who have rejoined the party or have come out of the woodwork saying, oh, it's because we've got Corbyn, we're back to some good left-wing policies. And it's every single one of those policies, you're right, they're not centre ground, so you're never going to win a majority. And remember, you don't need 50% or 51% to win an election. Roughly, you need 40 to 42% voting for you, and you will win a government. So you don't have to convince everybody, but if you're not convincing two-fifths of the country that you're right, then you have got to change. Now, what will affect the change will be when the youngsters and these, you know, the other people get fed up because they're not going to get the renationalisation of railways from opposition. Doesn't happen. So they've got to be in the government. To get into government, it's a sudden realisation, oh, actually, we need power. The only thing I will say, the last thing about the Labour Party position, which makes it complicated and awkward, is if you get power, you have to have the responsibility of dealing with that power. And that's the big question that the public has about Labour. Are they trustworthy? Are they trustworthy to be responsible people when they're governing our country? And I think that's the question mark that everybody's saying, well, no, I don't think they are.
And we go live to the lines. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costabank.
Morning, Kate.
Well, Alf and I clearly know different kind of people. I can remember phoning up for friendship, not for voting intentions. Someone I'd known for 40 years and knew well. And I said, who are you going to vote for in the national executive elections? This is the one where Corbyn first came from nothing to leading. And though that wasn't clear at the time. And to my surprise, and I mention this because it may fit in with some of the stuff that Alf's been saying, this man who has said, oh, obviously, Corbyn. Now, there was no way that my mate was a nutcase far left in the caricatured sense. And, you know, he would have been happy with Healy, for example. And
would have been happy with Healy?
Yes.
That would have been an interesting...
You know, the big difference between Corbyn on the one hand and most of the Labour Party over time has been the stand on ban the bomb and foreign policy, and actually Corbyn's line is a bit closer to the generation that were growing up in the 60s.
You think the Corbyn has got more in common with the politics of the 60s? Alf,
and I would say, actually, I'll throw a ball game, a new line into this. Just as someone was talking earlier, and it was probably Alf, you know, God bless him, I was thinking, God, the Tories would love to be able to go back to the politics of their brand of the 1950s. Absolutely, but I love it. There was a Macmillan, known well as a one nation Tory. I mean,
brought down by the Tories.
You're talking about internal party internecine strife, and it's a very great bore. The Tories and the Labour on both sides is a very great bore to most normal voters. And the reason why the 2017 general election suddenly thrown, where May thought she was going to decapitate completely and wipe off the map, she was advised so, the Labour Party completely, instead of which quite the reverse happened, and she lost her overall majority and actually had to go hat cap in hand, paying the DUP, for God's sake.
That's not the political history of our country, and we do know different people. Yeah. And whilst Macmillan might have been a statesman-like leader, if you talk to any Tory, the start of Toryism was the introduction of Margaret Thatcher into their system.
We agree on that one. But the point is that the Tory party since Thatcher has, you know, now it works literally. The policies work for cutting the tax bills of the very rich and aiding, not overseas investment, quite the reverse, offshore banking.
That makes a wild...
I just thought I'd put the opposite point of view.
Yeah, but it's not an opposite point of view. I do apologise. It's not an opposite point of view. Nobody disagrees with what you're saying. But you tell me, on one instance, where you have these great policies that you can't introduce because you have no power. Ban the bomb was an issue for the left in the country. It was an issue for most people. Nuclear disarmament was an issue for most people. I was about when the ban the bomb marches.
No.
I was a kid.
Yes.
And my dad was called up for the war in Korea, all that sort of stuff. So I have some history of it. But the significant difference is that those people march in the streets of London. As soon as they got in power, one, you've got the trade unions on your back saying you can't destroy 5,000-6,000 direct jobs, 50,000 indirect jobs. You can't then convince them, because they influence other union members about how they vote. And when you rely, in the main, as Labour did, they don't rely on people who live in council estates. They rely on people at work, people.
Can I give the reason I mentioned the 2017 general election, where the outcome was very significantly different to that which was predicted? It was because the Labour Party, put forward a coherent manifesto that was a great deal to do with improving the lot of the country.
Michael Foote's manifesto,
the longest suicide note in history, was much better
as a manifesto. Don't quote things out of context. The manifesto in 97 was written in a coherent way because they cut out three quarters of the policies that they would never have got elected on. It was a simple... If you remember it, the pledge cards, here's the five things we're going to do.
Can we talk about this century?
There is this century. That's where the history of Labour getting into power comes from. And we're not going to get into power with the leadership exists. Well, we're not going to, because it's been proven. How many elections have we won?
Sorry.
Under Corbyn, how many elections? We won stuff in the local elections in places where the left wing, the momentum people weren't standing.
Why won't May have another election? She's got a critical divide within her party.
Why does she need another election? You said it. Why does she need an election? She doesn't need any more people. And by the way, when the next general election comes...
She needs to get rid of the DUP.
Well, hang on. But she doesn't, because they're assisting her. And when the next general election comes, understand politics. When the next general election comes, there are boundary changes. Labour automatically lose. Well, they come up with a net deficit to the Tories of 16 seats. That gives her power. That gives the Tories power. And nobody's done anything. All they've done is move the boundaries.
Right, we have moving.
Different, we have different expectations.
Absolutely, just, different viewpoints. That's what makes viewpoints. So, Kate, thanks for your call in there. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio. The email, the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me or us on +34 645 99 67 95. Delighted to be joined in the studio by Charlie Mullins. Charlie, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. Morning to you all.
You've walked into the hotbed that is Viewpoint.
That's right. It's always very controversial, I think, and everyone's got their different views and opinions, and, you know, no one knows what's going to be going on.
It was good to have you with us. Just stay tuned. Right, then, 952-78-4000. I mean, Corbyn's had quite an interesting reaction from some of his party members. Chuka Umunna ordering to call off the dogs. Yesterday, he said that the motion of censure against the MP, who is the head of the Friends of Labour, Friends of Israel, that's been dropped, I think, and there's controversy, but he's been saying that the party now must turn its fire outwards, and saying that Labour will remain a broad church. I've got some fire going in here from inside the studio. Morning, Cooley.
You'd have said that. You'd have said that.
Right then,
in the 70s and 80s.
I've got a caller on the line. Good morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
My name is Brian, I'm calling you from Marbella. My viewpoint is the whole Labour thing and Conservative thing, I don't really go on an awful lot because, as you can hear from the accent, I'm Irish, which you should have a bit more Irish on it considering it's Talk Radio Europe. But anyway, I am just horrified to think that Alf would turn around and say that Theresa May, of course she won't get rid of the DUP, she needs them. You mark my words. The Minister Theresa May really needs them. They will stab her in the back. I cannot believe that a Conservative leader would go into a coalition with the DUP. But based on the likes of Ian Duncan Smith and some of the comments he made on live television, they obviously don't know their history. And they have just got into bed with the devil and so stupid, so embroiled in their own in-house politics. They don't care about the British people. They don't care about anything else except their own reputations. And they're selling the country down the swanny to save their own ass.
Thank you very much for that opinion there, Brian. You can, of course, catch our show live on air with Ger Sweeney every Monday evening from 6 for an Irish viewpoint on what's happening. Turning the fire outside. Charles, you want to come back on any of your thoughts on what's happening with the Labour Party at the moment?
I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, I certainly would say Conservatives are in a mess at the moment and anything could happen. You know, I think we certainly need some changes out there and better leadership, but, you know, I don't think Jeremy Corbyn's the man to lead the party, that's for sure.
A broad church, Alf. I mean, surely politics should be about a party. A big party like the Conservatives, like Labour, like Lib Dems or whatever, should be able to take in all factions. You're going to have a central mass of people all pushing the same way. You'll always have fringes. Perhaps the fringes, I mean, I...
Absolutely. Look, I know there's supposedly half a million members today, but in 1997, when we was going into the 97 general election, Labour trebled its membership. And it trebled its membership, not because it took on narrow-viewed people, it's because it took on a wide base, mainly from younger people, who wanted to see a country that was being run for their things. I heard a young lady on the telly the other day talking about student fees. We were talking about student fees 30 years ago. Nothing's changed. And that's the problem. By the time that young lady, you know, becomes 35 or 40... it's a forgotten issue for her, but it will still be an issue for the students at that time. So, yeah, the politics that we're getting isn't a reflection. So, yeah, a broad church. Labour's always said it's a broad church. It's just unfortunate that the left see the broad church being as broad as they want it and not a broad church. It's, you know, they called themselves the broad left, but they were very narrow. And one last thing is, it's also, you have to understand the history of some of this stuff. I ain't going to give a history lesson of the thing. I was talking about Margaret Hodge a couple of weeks back, and I happened to say that she was a good MP. Stephen Ritson on his show afterwards said, oh, well, Alf would say that, wouldn't he? Because Margaret Hodge was New Labour and Alf Brewer's New Labour. Yeah, I've never been New Labour in my whole life, ever. I opposed the New Labour setup. I happened to work in a party, but if people don't understand that was a marketing ploy to win the 97 general election, how do you get people to vote for something that's not old Labour? Old Labour, high taxes, high spending. New Labour, low taxes, low spending. How do you do it? Well, I'll tell you what, you call yourselves New Labour.
We've got an email in here from David. Alf, if your way of Labour is getting elected is to have Tory-like policies, what's the point in Labour if they do?
No, I didn't say that you have to have the policies. Listen, for most people, when you go through it, when we did the 97 generally, I learned so much during that. It wasn't Blair. The group of people, including Mandelson and lots of MPs and front benchers, were all saying the same thing. If you put too many policies to the public, they will pick the one that they don't like and they'll vote against you. So pick the policies that you think are most favourable. Student loans, better health service, better education, you know, the five pledges that they gave, we're going to do this, 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 and it narrows the argument and the comments down to a few. Once you get a majority, and to be honest, 97 was a landslide. That was never forecast. I was working in the 52nd most marginal seat in the country, and we needed 56 of them to win power. I don't know how many hundreds we won, but we won loads more than that. But that's because we spent, and the Tories, remember, held on to the last minute. They extended the election even over the Easter period by another 2 weeks just to keep power. And that's the issue for May. She's keeping power because when she's in power, she can do what she wants. If she's in opposition, she just has to sit there and throw stones and pebbles. But the whole essence of where we were for 97, you focus on what you're doing. Don't get sidetracked. So you can have the best policies in the world, but if people ain't going to vote to get rid of your nuclear deterrent because enough people in the country say we're keeping it, then understand you don't have that as a policy. What you can say is, what I agree with is, long term, along with others, we must have a way of getting rid of nuclear weapons. We must be able to do that. It hasn't happened in 50 years. So you know, don't have pie-in-the-sky stuff. You can have an aspiration, you can have a principle, you can have a philosophy, but if you can't deliver it to get power and you keep saying, oh, by the way, we're going to nationalise the health service, we're going to nationalise education, we're going to nationalise the rail service, and one person stands up and says, who's going to pay for all this, like us? And effectively, the electorate say, no, don't be so stupid, and they won't vote for you. You don't get the vote, you don't get the power, you don't get the opportunity to change. How many times do you have to learn the lesson? Stop pie in the sky stuff.
Stop pie in the sky, Andreas.
I'm going to go back a bit in history here. What we mustn't forget is that the 1980s in the UK saw a big transformation in society that went from being majority of a working class society to a middle class society. And there is where you find the that middle ground of a middle class society that will look for centre ground policies. And that's what Labour did in 97, moving to that part of the politics. And this is what Labour today is deserted, that centre ground.
But do we think there are attack dogs? I mean, we have people saying get Corbyn to call his dogs off. Do we think that there are, you know, attack dogs in the Labour Party at the moment?
There's always been an undermining class. Sorry, I've mentioned class in the wrong way. Working class, middle class, yeah, nobody's changed. It's called people who have aspirations and people who have got more affluent. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't have a refrigerator, a washing machine and a car. And all. People want that. They aspire to get those things. So you try to change the country to do it. And that's when a government comes along and says, we're going to give you this. Remember, it was a Labour government that gave the National Health Service. Before that, people relied on the goodwill of rich people to put their hand in their pocket to pay for some people's health. It was the rich people that put their hand in their pocket to pay for some of the educational institutions that were raised. Go into any smallish town in England and you'll see the building that was the school that was paid for by the local rich people. Yeah, and that changed after the Second World War. That all changed. Well, after the First World War, but significantly changed after the Second World War because people had money in their pocket. And understand, after the Second World War, I don't know how many it was, 1.5 million people coming back to no employment. And I mean no employment. So you had to create jobs. I worked in one of the state-run industries, and this is where Thatcher was clever. The state-run industries, after the Second World War, overpopulated their workforce by 25% so that people weren't coming back, having fought for their country, weren't coming back to unemployment. So they created work that didn't exist. Talk to anybody who understood state-run industries, they were all overstaffed. What Thatcher, and but the problem is nobody, you know, further along the line, 15, 20 years on, we were still overpopulating that, which is when Thatcher comes along and says, you know, never mind British Telecom that you're making £1 million a second. We can get you to make £10 million a second. Therefore, we're going to privatise you. And the first thing that happens with that is you cut your workforce by 50%. And everybody goes, oh, fine. It's fine for the first industry because most of them did find other employment or they survived on their redundancy pay. But then you do it to the water industry, the gas industry, the miners, you know, it's shipbuilding. What you do is you push all these people into unemployment with nothing for them to go to.
Quick email in from Richard that says, what is this obsession with rail nationalisation? Why do people think British trains will run better under government control? Will be more Viewpoint after this.
TRE.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
You listen to Viewpoint, always live, always lively on this Tuesday morning, 25 minutes, the top of the hour is the time. 952-78-4000, the phone number, studio@tre.radio, the email, Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official, and WhatsApp, +34 645 9967 95. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, Alf Brewer, and Charlie Mullins. Let's move away from the Labour Party. I'm sure that one will run and run and run, as the saying goes. The front pages are all full of Operation Save Teresa, or Save Teresa, according to the EU leaders rallying around the Prime Minister. Michael Barnier's intervention, Operation Save Teresa, warns that any deal still faces sabotage in the House of Commons and around Europe. As Johnson targets Tory leadership, Barnier declares optimism on deal within 8 weeks. The pound climbs after Brussels tries to relieve pressure on the Prime Minister. Boost for May as the EU negotiator says November is realistic and we are not far from agreement. Charlie, you are in the centre of this. People will know you from your TV appearances on your thoughts on Brexit, etc. What are you thinking at the moment when you hear headlines like that?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I believe there's going to be a deal, but let's not kid anybody. They're not going to do her any favours. We're in a lot of trouble at the moment with it. There's a big mess up on it. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I still don't think Brexit's going to happen. You know, there's a legal case going on at the moment regarding the leavers that they cheated. And if that's proven that they have cheated, then it's all going to be void. The referendum will be void because of the cheating by them. So I'm not going to read too much into that. We're obviously very much in trouble. I believe there will be a deal, but not a good deal at all.
I mean, that brings into the thing, the second referendum, but Theresa May was absolutely saying that that would be anti-democratic and she wasn't going to have a second referendum, Charlie. So, I mean, that's how do you think that a European court would say you have to re-sit this? I mean, how do you think that would play itself out?
Well, I mean, you know, a cheat's a cheat. So, you know, if you cheat on something, if you win a medal and you cheat, then they get the medal taken away. And it's looking quite obvious that they have cheated, and it's going to be void. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of people now have changed their mind. We now know what we're letting ourselves in for. And something like, you know, I think it's 2 out of 3 people now are wanting to remain. You know, certainly in London, that's the case. So I'm not going to read too much into this. End result is I believe that Brexit's not going to happen.
Brexit's not going to happen, Andres.
Well, I said that 2 years ago. Brexit is not going to happen. It's almost impossible to happen the way you think is going to happen. But the whole point now is that where the public have got more information about Brexit, a lot of the public opinion has shifted towards Remain. And if you're calling on democracy, I think the right path would be to have a second referendum. I said this before. I know I've been criticised for saying that, but this is the truth. Public opinion has shifted. And don't forget, only a 10% or 8% shifting in public opinion would make Remain a victory on another referendum, a clear one, because he was so tied in the first place.
2%, not 8%. It's an 8% difference, but you need a 2% swing in order to
show.
It's massively now it's changing. As you say, people are more aware now of the disaster that possibly going to happen out there. And I just don't think people are stupid enough. You know, nobody voted to be poorer. And that's what's going to be out there. There's going to be a lot of people lose their jobs. There's going to be a lot of changes out there. And we're all going to be financially worse off. So, you know, now we know the truth. I really believe, as I say, there'll be a people's vote and another referendum.
But people said they voted to take back control about the issues that bother them. So, sure, I mean, if you're going to be financially a bit worse off in the short term, because we've had people saying, well, in a long-term situation, we're going to be better off because we're going to be able to sort out our new trade
deals.
Well,
you told a couple of people that are living in poverty that, you know, short-term you're going to be worse off. You know, some people are on the breadline and they can't afford to be worse off. So, you know, let's not kid anybody. The only people that really want this Brexit, you know, in the politicians are the people that are wealthy and going to do very well out of it. Not the normal working people don't want it.
Got a caller on the line. 952-78-4000 if you want to get your opinion now, your viewpoint across. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning to you, Giles. It's Brian here.
Morning, Brian.
I'm back in Spain after 7 weeks in London. Back to my beloved country. The last two speakers, I couldn't agree with them more. I mean, I've just come back from London, Giles, and I stayed at Her Majesty's Premier Armed Services Club, is the official title, in London. And I bet so many, you'll never get more loyal Brits than the British Army and our Navy and the Air Force. I met so many in the club. And you know the bar talk, you have a chat about what do you think about it. And I didn't meet one who genuinely believed that not so much the Brexit wouldn't go ahead, but they to believe in the principle of Brexit. I mean, you know, the fact is that geographically we are in Europe, but that's one of the important things, and the cost of sending, for example, cars to Australia and New Zealand and India is going to be a hell of a lot more for the manufacturers than sending it through the tunnel. And the way that, you know, to Europe and places like that. But I personally hope what the two gentlemen have just said is going to be the case. I think, you know, I worry about being the poor man of Europe if we do go out. And the general consensus or opinion of all the people that I met was that there should be legitimately a second referendum, but it was all cocked up by Cameron, who fled like a coward as soon as the vote, you know, was in favour of Brexit. But I think he should have said, instead of saying in or out, he should have said, right, we'll have the referendum. This is what the people seem to be asking for. And if it's agreed to have one, you know, to have to pull out, then we will have another referendum to present to the people exactly what it means, you know, in every detail by pulling out of Europe. That's the way it should have been done. So it was cocked up from the very start. But the opinion now in the UK, honestly, I've had 7 weeks, I didn't meet one person who didn't believe that there should be another referendum and that we should remain in Europe. And I sincerely hope that that is what happens.
Thanks for the call. And good to have you back with us, Brian.
Yeah, thank you, Giles. Nice to talk. I did listen to you occasionally from London.
Well, that's nice to know that
online.
We have.
Online? Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio, the email. Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. And WhatsApp, +34 645 99 67 95 on the WhatsApp. How do you know that people will be better? How do you know people will be worse off in the short term? How can we base our whole future on the, quote, will of the people, unquote, which was effectively one day in the summer of 2016 when the current will of the people is now different? Panel.
Seriously, I must come back because Brian is an old mate of mine and he listened to this view and he's been to London and heard these people. But the reality is he got it right at the beginning. Cameron was doing this to survive. For him, it didn't work, but the Tories survived. And the Tories will do whatever it takes for the Tories. 20 Tory MPs, supposedly, are going to vote against, you know, Theresa May and whatever plan she puts forward. Big deal. What do you think the Labour Party are going to do? They've said throughout the piece, whatever deal comes back, they're going to have a look at it and they're going to do this. Pragmatism breaks out in the Labour Party when they go, if we vote against it, we're voting against our voters, because Labour ain't stupid. So many Labour voters voted to leave Europe, against my better judgment, but that's a fact. So you have to be pragmatic in all this stuff. So 20 Tory MPs ain't going to bring down Theresa May, because there'll be plenty of others in the House of Commons who will vote to support it. And to say, you know, there's legal cases. Well, the Leavers cheated. The people who said they cheat. Do you know, every single general election, there is at least one, if not more, MPs who are taken to court because they cheated. You've never heard of one of them having to go through another selection or another election or another. They will cover it up. They will fob it off. They will mystify it. They will do all sorts of things. So you can say, oh, well, they cheated. Therefore, they cheated. And people go, well, they cheated. I tell you what they'll say. They cheated, but it didn't affect the outcome, because that's what they always say. So pinning your hopes on something that ain't going to exist, stop doing that. Be pragmatic. The Tories are for the Tories, and they'll do what's best for the Tories, not what's best for the country.
And we're going to go live to the lines, which have gone very, very busy. Good morning, Cooley, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, hi, it's John from Islington.
Good morning, John.
Just to reply a few things, I think what we've been saying for a long time is that Barnier will be peripheral. It will come back to sovereign nations, which it is now. That's why the inference was changed a little bit yesterday. And, you know, sovereign nations are responsible to their public and their corporations and their businesses. And just for the chap there, Charlie, is it? If the EU don't want the UK to buy 360 billion of goods, and we are their best customer, if French, Italian and Spanish producers don't want to trade with the UK, where they are the biggest client, if the EU tourist industry don't want us, the holidaymakers there, which again, we are the biggest client, and I can see Spain, I can see France, I can see the producers now, it's hitting home, turning on their own people. We buy 45 billion of autos from Europe and export 15 billion. It doesn't make sense, but there's another thing that's actually come into the equation, and that's Trump. Trump's come into the equation, and the EU cannot survive a double whammy of losing their best customer, which is the UK. And also, you've got Trump there complaining about his $150 billion deficit. They haven't had talks yet, but Trump will be tough. And if they also get a whammy from the US, which they could have, putting 10% on cards or whatever the case may be, but the EU will definitely make concessions to him, unfortunately for most. They will make concessions. And consequently, the UK as well being there, the UK is in a very strong position. And if you reverse the situation, we have a $100 billion trade deficit with the EU. If we reversed it and the UK had never joined the EU, the EU would be bending over backwards for us to join them. So its political expediency has recently taken over from common sense, but now common economic sense is coming back into the equation, which is going to change things. We'll see what develops. It's only just changing. And there's another point that worries me, and this is why I don't really care whether we stay in or we go out. We're on the 10th anniversary of the big crash in 2008. We've had a record 10 years. At some stage, that's going to change. And Europe has colossal debts, unfortunately, including the UK. And there's only one country that can bail out the EU, and that is Germany. And Germany, the Bundesbank, a very conservative bank, and I don't think they'll bail it out. And that's going to be the major, major problem, apart from the political problem that's coming up. And just a very quick word for Mr. Sweeney, is it?
Charlie Mullins or Andres Gallardo?
No, Mr. Sweeney came on from Ireland, the Irish situation.
Oh yes, no, he didn't. No, that was Brian from an Irish caller. Right. Sweeney presents the program on Monday evening. Okay,
just to say, basically, Ireland has to make a choice. I'm not sure the Irish people know about it. The EU have told you in no uncertain terms that this facilitating of corporate deals where they pay no tax, and the main culprits are Luxembourg and the Republic. That's all up, and in a couple of days' time, you get the Juncker talking of the EU meeting, and you see how aggressive the parliamentarians are against that. France and Germany are trying to put a 3% tax on their sales. The two countries against it, Luxembourg and Republic. And also the EU have told the Republic that they're going to harmonise taxation. So the 12.5% tax they've been getting away with is going to be harmonised. That'll be out of the window too. And also, the Republic of Ireland, I am a Republican, have actually benefited tremendously from the EU. But now they're going to be paying in up to $3 billion, a contributor up to $3 billion. So I think Ireland has to make its mind up. And to be honest with you, it is the EU is a failing organisation, unfortunately. And most of the people don't like the totalitarian of it. And to get back to, and all we really need is a free trade agreement, which in many ways, with $100 billion deficit, a free trade agreement should be, in normal circumstances, no problem. But it's become politically that the EU are worried about the domino effect. I don't think there would be a domino effect because the UK is the EU's biggest customer, and we are a totally unique compared to the rest of Europe.
John, thanks for your call.
Leave you with that.
Thank you very much indeed. Going live to lines. Thanks for calling, Corley. Thank you for holding, Corley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, Sharon Alicante.
Morning, John, Sharon.
Morning, John. It's on the fence, John, the lever. John, you're a lever. It's fine, but don't keep pretending you're sitting on the fence. You keep throwing these figures at us. Only 9% of German cars, I think it's 8% now, are exported to the UK. We're one small country with a 1.66 something trillion debt. We've got massive debt too. And you keep talking about it, it's all going to break up. Now, I think that, of course, there will be problems, but there always are problems with any individual country has problems. So I just think that the UK is one country to which the EU exports, and the German car manufacturers have said that they rather sacrifice their 8-9% of car manufacturing exports to the UK than give up the freedoms of the European Union. So that I just think that there are bigger caveats. Regarding the financial crash, yes, John is right there. There's an interesting article in the Times again about how the fallout has led to people these people haven't been punished, that there are people, working people now using food banks, which has never happened before, that they were the real cause of today's current problems. The crash was the real cause in the way it was handled, that various national governments, particularly the UK and the US, the article points to the Fed and it points to the UK government and its austerity and how people have come through that worse off. How the wealthy, through the various tax havens, yes, I know about the EU one, but there are probably more tax havens outside the EU than in them. How the wealthy, the gap between the top and the bottom has increased, and how the government handling of the situation was so bad that we've now got a lot of resentment with our working population, hence Brexit and hence Trump. Thank you.
Thanks for the call in. One final caller in. Thank you for calling. Thank you for holding, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles.
Good morning, Hans.
Is this live today?
You're now live, indeed.
Are you sure?
I'm very, very sure. And the time is exactly 8 minutes to 11.
Well, if the program is live, then maybe the call from John from Islington is recorded and played every second week, because basically since 2 years he's making the same comment. So I just wondered if this is a pre-recorded one when he comes up with his figures, or if it's the actual one from today. Called up and said the same thing.
Yes, indeed.
And over again.
Yeah, indeed, Hans, that is indeed a live call on TRE Talk, your voice in Spain.
Just one small point to John. Because he comes all the time with his car industry, and as he might understand, I'm following pretty much German TV and other programs there. Just the Volkswagen Group, he will surely know the figures, because I'm out now and I'm not sitting in front of a computer, but I'm pretty sure the Volkswagen Group last year made a 20 billion win. And bearing in mind that they have all those law cases in the United States because of the diesel scandal and in Europe, and still they made 20 billion win with all the problems they're having. So doesn't he not think that the 7-8% of the cars those guys are selling, Mercedes, BMW, over to Britain, they can afford to get the 10% taxes on them, because then they just take the 10% off and make a little less a win on a car they're selling.
Hans?
They will adjust. They will adjust. I mean, the French car manufacturers might have more problems, and the Italians probably as well.
Thank you.
Mainly, the guys in England buying Volkswagens, BMWs, Mercedes, even Ford cars, they will still buy them because the manufacturers will just make special offers. The price will stick probably the same. That's why he's too much worried about the German economy. German economy has never been as strong as it is.
Thanks very much.
I would suggest that you guys stay with the strong people and not working against them.
Stay with the strong people. That's Hans's opinion.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. I'm joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, Alf Brewer and Charlie Mullins. Going quickly to the emails from Robert. Are we experts going to get a vote if there's another referendum? We didn't the first time because we live here. And also Peter says, my heart jumped into my mouth when Brian started the sentence, I stayed at Her Majesty's. The usual ending, of course, is prison. And of course, it would never happen to such a gentleman. Welcome back, Brian. Right, Charlie, your thoughts on what you heard thus far?
Well, I mean, Brexit's obviously a lot more than just the car industry. And I think, you know, it's being taken out of context. A lot of the experts are predicting, you know, we're going to be financially worse off. We're going to lose lots of jobs. I think someone said that, you know, we're the EU's biggest customer, but I think the EU is also our biggest customer. You know, we export a hell of a lot to them. And why would we shut the door down on sort of 500 million potential customers? All we're trying to do now is get ourselves back round the table where we was. I think, you know, the guy said that, you know, it's not a big deal. We can call a deal any moment. But 2 years they've been negotiating, so it obviously ain't that clear cut. And, you know, I feel that we're going to get a deal, but it's not going to be the best deal. We're going to be worse off than being in the EU.
I mean, as a business owner and, you know, quite a high profile one, I mean, how do you prepare for something, for the unknown that's going to be hard Brexit, soft Brexit, or no Brexit, whatever Brexit?
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of business people now are very sort of careful, and uncertainty is creating, a bad sort of atmosphere in the UK at the moment. And people ain't investing, properties, people are not buying them. So it's the uncertainty out there, people are going to be losing their jobs. And we can't keep going against all the experts that are predicting we're going to be worse off.
And we're going to go live to the lines, and then I'll come to you, Andres. Just a quick call in. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello,
you're live on TRE.
Oh, it's John's on.
Hello, John. I can hardly hear you.
How's it now?
Still, you sound like you're doing a space mission, John.
Well, not quite. The Welshman was right, as usual. And I'm talking now. He's right, too.
Okay, thank you for that one. I can hardly hear you, John. Sorry, I'm going to have to leave you on that one. Andres, last 50 seconds of this first half.
Very quickly. Going back to Cameron, I think Cameron sold us at one point in 2015 that he was going to go back to Europe. He was going to reform the whole thing, and then he would come back and ask for a vote. He did none of that. He went to Europe, had lunch with someone, very, very weak positioned. He came back and called a referendum that he didn't need to call anyway because he had a majority in Parliament. The second thing is one of your callers said, do Spanish and France and everyone want to trade with the UK? Of course they do. That's the whole point of the European Union, that we can trade with each other very easily. Why would you want to stop that? And finally, on the preparing the Brexit, when I watch the English news and read the English newspapers, you're taking a very inward view of the Brexit negotiations. You're not looking outwards towards Europe and see what the position is going to be. Because from now, as they start getting into it deeply, you're going to have a shock because Europe is going to retaliate because they have to defend their position of the European Union.
Right then, international national news, and then we're back with Boris in Barcelona after the news.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown. Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. Always live, always lively with you for the next 52 minutes or so. 952-78-4000 is the phone number, studio@tre.radio, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Don't forget, we also Twitter, we tweet, we are at TRE Talk is Good. There's an Instagram feed. You can listen to this show again via the app as well, Talk Radio Europe. There's a myriad of ways to keep the viewpoint with you at all hours of the day. Joining me in the studio, Andres Gallardo, Alf Brewer and Charlie Mullins. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Alf, we'll let you get a comeback because we were talking about Brexit in Brexit business before the break. Alf, your thoughts, and then before we move away from Brexit.
Yeah, I keep on trying to remind people, you know, don't keep trying to rewrite history. Cameron put into the Tory party manifesto to win the election that they were going to have a referendum. It didn't say we may. It didn't say we're going to consult. It didn't say we're going to negotiate. It said we're going to give the British people a referendum. He did whatever he did in Europe. Everybody knew he wasn't going to get anywhere. Britain are going to throw their weight around. I don't think so. But he didn't then just give up and say, well, I didn't do that. I don't have to call a referendum, but I'm going to anyway. That's not what happened, Andreas. 3 million UKIP voters is the pressure put onto Cameron to say, if I don't give them what I've promised in the Tory manifesto, then the Tory party are dead in the water. This is about pure politics. This is about survival. I'll keep on saying it. If you're not in power, you can't create change. They want to keep power. May will do all sorts of things to keep in power, irrespective of her. When she goes, because she will go one day, whoever replaces her will spend all their time keeping the Tories in power, because it's the only way you can make change in a country. And it's not pie in the sky stuff. So Cameron didn't just, he didn't have to call it. He was forced to call that referendum. 3 million votes against the Tories would have said, you're out of power for a long time. Don't do it again. So, yeah, please don't try and rewrite history.
I think Cameron at the time had a great opportunity to take the lead in Europe and make real changes. The European Union is not perfect. It's okay, but it's not perfect. And he had the opportunity to do that. He didn't do it. He was too weak to do it.
Andreas, I agree with you. You know, whatever he said when he went to Europe, Britain had no power. Like, they've got very little power now, other than staying in for trade terms. But that's not what most of the expats in Spain are interested in. They're interested in health service and education and stuff like that. They're not interested in the trade is there, it's going to happen. That's for big business, people who make money out of it. But, you cannot keep rewriting history. And he never had the time. The process of going through Parliament and the parliamentary system meant if he hadn't have called the referendum for then, there probably wouldn't have been time in that parliamentary session to call a referendum. Therefore, he would have reneged again on a Tory party manifesto, remembering, and somebody rang in earlier about will we get a vote this time. On three occasions, the Tories, not Labour, the Tories have promised they're going to get rid of the 15-year limit for voting in elections. Three terms of office. They still haven't got it in the Queen's speech. They still haven't got it through the parliamentary process. It will not happen in this election period because there's no parliamentary time left for it.
And we go live to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. Felix here.
Good morning, Felix.
How are you doing? I listened to Alf there and, you know, basically agree with him. However, I think that there is something that is far, far more fundamental than how Cameron came about bringing in this law, which is, I'll try and deal with it briefly. Basically, I researched this during the week and I was quite struck that the British parliamentary system is actually in play in Britain, or in England at the time, from the 13th century. And the rules of the system from that time is that Parliament decides. And in this case, it was Parliament that decided on its vote for a referendum. And as soon as that happened, then the rules, I could say the rules of the game, but it's more than a game, the rules of the game went into operation, which was that you have a vote. No, sorry. Before you have a vote, you've got a time for a deliberation where each side puts forward its point of view with proof, etc. And each side is able to answer lies, and there are lies, and that's the whole nature of the system. And then the vote is taken. And if you want to change this vote, you've really got to change the whole system in that you've got to say something like, okay, Parliament doesn't really mean a lot. Parliamentary votes don't really mean a lot. They're not decisive. But then you really are into a whole different ballgame then, because what will happen is that a great percentage of people in England will no longer have any faith in Parliament. Parliament will be an irrelevance. And then you're into a situation, I hope Alf will sort of take, come in on this. Well, then when I say you're into a different ballgame completely, you're into either a fascist dictatorship rule or a Bolshevik rule. Hope Alf does understand what I'm saying here. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Felix, for your points of view there. I wanted to go live to one more caller before you come in there, Alf. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca. Alf is wrong about one point. The manifesto commitment needed approval by Parliament to, otherwise it wouldn't have happened. And that debate in Parliament was very bitterly fought by people who were dead worried about exactly the way that Alf's been talking about it. It was only passed on the explicit condition that it was advisory. Now, I agree that the pamphlets that were shamefully authorised later use the kind of rhetoric that you do in manifestos, in which it said, you know, this is your vote, this is your chance, we will do what you say. But they had no authority, because you go back to the... You don't have to go back to the 13th century, Felix. If you go back to what was passed in Parliament to authorise the referendum, it said very explicitly it is advisory.
Thanks for the call in there. Right, Alf, I want to come back on a few points there.
Yeah, all referendums are advisory. That's just a misnomer. It's the way of the system. And, you know, Felix, you're right. I'm not sure I agree with the last bit you said, because I see it as anarchy. You know, if you don't want a parliament, if you don't agree with a parliament, if you ignore the parliament, you end up in anarchy, because there's no control. There's no, yeah. I think somewhere in Spain there was a civil war created by the anarchists because of that, because they wouldn't participate.
The gentleman to your right hand side will put you right on that one.
Well, okay, whatever it is, I know the anarchists were knocking around. I don't know much about the Spanish Civil War, but I just know that it was wrong. And as for the manifesto stuff, because you can always nitpick about this stuff, the Tory Party put together a manifesto before the general election. Cameron happened to be the leader, but the manifesto was agreed by the Tory party. They then put one element of that manifesto to Parliament, which said, shall we have a referendum? That was Parliament's decision to have a referendum. After they decided that, they look at the result of it, and the Tory party as a party and the government put to Parliament that we're going to enact it. And on a third occasion, they went back to Parliament, Theresa May, am I going to fill in this form to officially, legally apply to withdraw from the European Union? So they didn't do it once, they did it three times. And if you can't understand, Parliament is the top and bottom of everything, and Felix is right. You know, Parliament makes the decisions. They are the decision-making machine. If you don't like it, the only way you can change it, in parliamentary terms, is to vote against the people that are in office and put different people in. That's the only way to change British politics, which is why I keep saying you should participate in voting, because at the end of the day, Politics is what runs your life in every single facet of what you do, including the quality of the air that you breathe. So understand, people should be involved in politics. You don't have to get overly involved, but you should participate in votes and you should decide who's going to be in control. So the manifesto was there, and all the Tory party did was live by the manifesto, but Cameron and the government did it through the parliamentary system. That's correct history.
Okay, going to go live to the lines one more time before we move away from this subject. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. It's Jason. Good morning, panel. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
I can. You're coming through loud and clear, Jason.
Yeah, look, I think after the horse has bolted, I think you can extrapolate and procrastinate forever over things. I think the whys and wherefores are another matter. You know, a decision so great that affects the direction of a nation should ultimately go to the people. The people that wanted to remain and accepted the decision with humility, I think that's credible, that the politicians and the people that put self-interest first, rather selfishly, trying to change things are only actually damaging the country now in a political state sense worldwide, but also our embattled Prime Minister. They're the kind of people with this treasonable behaviour, and I include the politicians as well. If you're in a war situation and you had an embattled government, they're the people that would be stabbing the country in the back instead of thinking of the greater good. So I really think now people have to just basically, on every level, just a bit of common sense, a bit of fortitude, and move forward. The best Prime Minister, you know, would have been Nigel Farage, but he is to football what Ryan Clough was. He'll be the best Prime Minister that will never be.
I think you mean that Nigel Farage is to football. I mean, I think you mean Brian Clough was to football. Charlie?
Yeah, I just want to add a point here, which Alf said, you know, people should get involved in politics and entitled to their votes. But as we know, the expats weren't allowed to vote on this referendum.
No, we were. So long as we was in the 15-year rule. I had a
okay.
vote.
Okay, well, it's now, it's the expats that are actually taking this claim now to the courts, the UK in challenge to the EU. It's the expats that are the main claimants behind it, and they're the ones that are now forcing the issue, you know, to make sure that this was illegal, what went on. So, you know, I'm going to go back to what I said from day one. You know, it was illegal, therefore the referendum's going to be void and there will be another vote.
There we go. Charlie Mullins there, live on TRE Talk Radio, up your voice in Spain, talking about Barcelona after this.
TRE
Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme, always live, the discussions go on and on, both on and off air. 952-78-4000 is the phone number, studio at tre.radio, the email. Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, by Alf Brewer, and by Charlie Mullins. 952-78-4000. We're turning away from Brexit and British politics at the moment and going on to the subject of Catalonia. Hundreds of thousands of Catalans are expected to fill the streets of Barcelona today for the Spanish region's first commemorative day since its leader declared independence last year and pitched the country into constitutional crisis. Supporters of splitting the wealthy northeastern region from the rest of Spain have in recent years used today, Diada, I believe it is called, as the anniversary of the fall of their coastal capital to Spanish forces in 1714, just in case you're wondering, to promote the cause. This year, Quim Torra, Catalonia's controversial leader, who took over from his exiled predecessor after Madrid ended a period of direct rule, has called for a mass rally in support of his bid for a binding referendum on independence. Our government has committed to making the Republic a reality, Torra said in a televised address to mark the occasion. I wish you all a very good Diada. Long live free Catalonia. I caught some other conversations or some other speeches of Quim Torra last week. Certainly controversial, certainly fiery. Andres, I know you have your own very strong thoughts on this.
Yeah, you have to have strong thoughts because otherwise they're going to run away with it. Kim Torra is completely deranged. The things he's saying on live television, the amount of confrontation that he's expecting to have is ridiculous. Today is the opening of the new season of the soap opera with this big demonstration in Barcelona. This is going to continue because they've got plans of taking over administration buildings, paralyze the country, have more demonstrations, and this is going on and on and on. The biggest problem here is that they are doing in public spaces, they're taking over and taking their view, shutting out 50% of the population who are not proposing independence and they want the status quo. And that's a big problem. I mean, they're only looking at their own and they'll continue to do so with an amount of... they're allowing them to get away with it from central government and from other administrations. The only ones that they are trying to take control of the situation by applying the law are the judges. But really, it shouldn't be the judges. It should be the government and the politicians who bring a solution to the problem.
I mean, we've got a new, obviously, since the vote last year and the rallies and the demonstrations and the violence on both sides, I suppose you could say, we've got a new prime minister. Is Sanchez taking, is he open, do you think, to negotiation about independence for Catalonia?
He said when he went into government that he wanted to start a line of dialogue and trying to sort of be a nice guy, intending to sort of understand their situation and find a solution. But the response from the other side is independence or nothing, independence or independence. So they don't give in, they're not giving a lot of choice. So they don't want to negotiate anything. They just want what they want at all costs. And that can't be. The problem here is that they've done this unilaterally without taking into account the rest of Spain. The rest of Spain have got something to say about this, and they don't want to know. Torra, the president, said he was invited to go to Parliament in Madrid to present his proposals and vote them. And he said Madrid has got anything to vote for the things that we do, as if they were already a republic. I'm sorry, they're not. But this is going to continue on and on because... The biggest problem they've got in Catalonia is they've got the television is controlled by them, the education is controlled by them, schools, secondary schools, universities, and they all are a factory of pro-independence people. The younger the people they are, the more pro-independence they are. And with these demographics in sight, what's going to happen is that in 10 years' time, the 50% will be 70% or 75%, and that will be then unstoppable. I think this they have to take a hard stand, take the television away from them, make it the television for all the people who pay their taxes, which is all of us, and take away this control of the universities and the schools.
But that's if you do that, they will say that you are imposing direct rule. We were talking off air, the Catalan people, the Catalan separatists have already run a really successful social media and media campaign saying we are being oppressed. If you caught Kim Torra's speech last week, as I did, he was saying we want to have a referendum again. We want to have it. We don't want to have helicopters circling in the air. We don't want to have police standing at the gates of schools where voting is going on. They want a free and fair election. I've got the figures just in from the Centro de Estudios d'Opinio. That was in July, showing 46.7% of Catalans wanted an independent state, just ahead of 44.9% who do not. I mean, this looks like an unstoppable juggernaut of demographics and people's will.
It is unstoppable. And I think in our lifetimes we'll see a Catalonia independent unless we do something about it. What happened last year was illegal. They called for a referendum that was illegal, and you couldn't give them a lot of people say, why didn't you let them vote? Because if you let them vote, you are saying that that's okay to vote on something that is not allowed. So they had to show a way of saying what you're doing is not legal. So they put the police and so on. They, of course, then the social media exaggerated what the police did and so on. And they've been feeding on that. And the fact that there's seven or eight politicians are currently in jail, for rebellion. And, that's created a base of protest that has continued, well, from last year. It hasn't stopped, but now they are sort of preparing what they are being calling in the Spanish media the hot autumn of more and more protests. So the problem hasn't gone away, it's still there, and it'll continue to be a problem for a long time. Biggest problem for them and for the rest of Spain is that the economy is being now have a problem. A lot of companies have left Catalonia. The tourism has dropped big time. The sale of cars, that a lot of people like to talk in this program about cars, has dropped. So the economy is being affected by what it is simply a political problem.
Again,
you can't keep writing this new history, Andreas. With all due respect, I'm not Spanish. I understand a little bit of it. But let's put it, the economy is affected and companies are moving away. Not true. Companies this week, only this week, have started to decide to go back to Catalonia where they had their originals. Yes, they have. One of the biggest companies in Spain has just returned to its offices in Barcelona last week. Tourism is affected. It's got nothing to do with the independence. It's because there's a bunch of Spanish people, and not just in Barcelona or in Catalonia, who are saying, tourists are our enemy. We don't want all you tourists because you just cause us a problem. So that's got nothing to do with an independence arrangement. It's because the people of up there are saying, we don't want you. And it's happening a little bit, not as much, but if you go into Malaga city centre on occasion, it happens there as well. And you know, Giles asked, it's quite a logical question. New president, Pessoa, completely different background to what's his name who was there before?
Rajoy.
And it's called, yes, Sanchez did say we want negotiations, but it's not on the basis of independence. So the people that are there who are saying, no, we only want to talk about independence, are quite right. When you're negotiating for what you want and when you make a stand on what you want. And there is, for those people, I know John Harper doesn't like the word, but there is no compromise. Give us a vote on independence. Now, why is it that the Spanish government, because it would kill it off legally, I'm doing the inverted commas, nobody can see them, it would kill it off illegally, is you called, we're going to have a referendum. We're going to have a referendum of Spain. Spain will decide if...
No,
I didn't say they didn't want it. I said they could have it. That's a resolute. I'll tell you what, it didn't happen in the UK. When Scotland were allowed to have their say on independence, no UK, none of the rest of the UK had a say, and yet it affects the economy and the social upbringing and everything that happens in the UK. At least in Spain, you have a law that says only Spain can decide if an area can set itself up independently, and that is the law, as I understand it, in Spain. Catalonia is saying we want a separate in, because they know if they had a referendum of the whole of Spain, the whole of Spain would say Catalonia's saying. They're not stupid. Plus the fact the pressure's coming on now because there's a second district now, is there not, who've come in with a claim for an independence vote?
Spain has had independent, you know...
Just now, last week.
Are you talking in the EU or within Spain?
No, within Spain. One of the northern areas of Spain.
Probably.
And we want... No, but they've renewed their call because, you know, Barcelona, Catalonia is saying, Torres or whatever his name was, said, we want a referendum. Somebody else has come out and said, exactly, and we want one as well. You know, the Spanish government have got some issues to deal with. And if the law says the whole of Spain decides, put it to the whole of Spain. If the whole of Spain say, go away, Catalonia, suffer the decision. if that had been, and I always smile at this, as you know, I was on when we were talking about Scottish independence. You know, go and ask the Scots if they want to be independent. Oh, no, we want to stay in the UK. Go and ask the English if they wanted Scotland to leave. I think you might have got a different answer.
Well, I mean, one of the things, though, is, I mean, if you look, the Constitution of 78 in Spain says, the reason that Spain has been a progressive, and you can argue, the reason that Spain has been a progressive democratic state since 1978 is the fact that some things you can't touch. And one of those things is that you can't have the independent regions asking themselves. Otherwise, the Basque Country will go. Otherwise, Galicia will have a crack at it. Otherwise, Andalusia, okay, we want to be the People's Republic of, you know, Andalusia. I mean, you stir up a nest of hornets that, like, you couldn't imagine. Andres, come back to me on that point.
Let me go back in history here a second, because these guys, they've gone completely the wrong way about it. You can't start the house from the roof. You have to start from the basement. In 1976, before the Constitution, and Franco had died, the king and the prime minister wanted to bring democracy to Spain and modernize the country. And they got to so-called parliament. It wasn't a parliament because it wasn't elected, but they went there and they said, hold on a second, you can't do that. To do that, you need to change the law. They went to the top lawyer of the country, and he rewrote the whole set of rules, rewrote the law of the state, and they did a lot of lobbying with all the members of that Congress to get it through. Once they had the law in their side, then is when they could legalize political parties, they could write a constitution, and they could do all that. They started the house from the basement. In Catalonia they're doing, they want to start a house for the roof. They've gone there, they've created this illegal referendum where only 40% of the people voted anyway, and they said, okay, now we have a republic. You just can't do that. You just cannot do it. You have to do things correctly if you want to to go about it.
But Andreas, politically, you can do anything you want if you're starting a campaign, other than, short of, violence. And that's where I'll always draw the line. But if the Catalonian people say, we are a republic, they're entitled to say whatever they want. Legally, they're not. Everything that goes with it means that they're still part of Spain. But it doesn't stop you. You know, it's like saying, we want a second referendum. The British UK law says it doesn't exist. It doesn't stop people campaigning for a second referendum. No different to it won't stop the Catalonians wanting independence. Doesn't matter how many votes or whatever you have, how many general elections, you cannot stop people saying, I want Scotland, even today, even having had a vote, still say we want independence.
There we go, lads of the lines. Good morning, caller. Thank you for holding you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. It's Jason again.
Yes, sir.
I've had the pleasure of working in Catalonia several times, invited up there to do some like stone work. Wonderful culture. This isn't a new thing. It's a very impassioned feeling in the culture that's gone back a long time. Do you think that the Spanish government, in its response, really, at this situation, has created a rock for its own back, in that it behaves somewhat like a dictator crushing a rebellion? And if the response needed to be so severe, they also said how serious and resistant, you know, the feeling is within that area. Do you think, I've got another point I'd like to raise after, but do you feel that it's been totally mishandled and basically, rather than finding a peaceful resolution, they've actually galvanized many of the hardline Catalans into a more entrenched position?
Thanks for the call in there, Jason. Do you think it's resulted in a more entrenched position, Andreas?
Well, you said something just an hour off. You said in politics, anything goes. Not if you break the law. And that's what happened last year.
No, they didn't break it. They had a referendum that they weren't entitled to use public money for. I'll give you that. I'll give you that much. But you cannot stop people. Listen, when CND were big in the UK, people marched the streets. That was illegal. When people were upset with the cuts in the NHS, people marched through London. That was illegal. But people still do it in order to make a point. What you have to understand is that the Catalonians, if they want to do that, you're quite right. They shouldn't have used public money. I'm not sure how much public money they used. They shouldn't have used the public buildings in order to have their thing. And the vote itself, the outcome of the vote was illegal. Everybody knows all of that. And then for the local politicians to say, oh, by the way, we're now a republic, was nonsense. But the government, the Spanish government, hold all the purse strings. In the UK we have it, it's called local democracy. So you give powers to the cities, you give powers to areas, metropolitan councils, London, Liverpool, but you can't run them from the government anymore. They're too big, they're too autonomous. And what Spain have got to find a way is to give them a lot more autonomy. You cannot take however much it is, 60% of their income away and give it to somebody else without them having a direct say. You can't do that.
And we're going live to the lights again. Good morning, caller. Thanks for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, good morning. Sharon Alicante. Just to say I'm with Andreas on this because I know for a fact about the education system there. The propaganda going on in the schools with the kids, they'll teach one side of history and not the other. They will teach the Catalonian language comes before Castellan, whereas in Valencia, Castellan comes first and Valencian second. And I think there has been a lot of use of public money and propaganda. The education system is crucial, is it not, for the attitudes and minds of the future generations. So I think Pedro is actually a bit more amenable than Rajoy was. He does at least want to talk and possibly give a bit more devolution, but not the right to total independence. So there is another side to this story. And by the way, for Alf to say the marches were illegal. Are you saying, Alf, that we can't march in the UK now? That's illegal. You also said that all referendums are advisory. They're not. Some referendums are binding. Other referendums aren't. And the UK referendum was advisory. So, yeah. Anyway, just to clarify a few things.
Thanks for that, Sharon.
There's never been a referendum in the UK that wasn't advisory. Never once. And just before we go off on this, again, I'm not in Spain. I do understand a little bit of the Spanish education system. And it's no point, Sharon, complaining about what they're doing in Catalonia in their education system when the Spanish government and the Spanish setup, as Andreas quite rightly said, when they wrote all these rules and when they did all that, they made education regional. We don't have regional education in the UK. We have an English curriculum. We have a Scottish one. We have a Scottish curriculum. It's all controlled and run by the government. The government dictate what goes on in schools. That's not true in Spain. So, of course, you're going to get Catalonia doing their own thing because they're entitled to, because you gave them that autonomy. You can't then say, we're going to close you down. The same as television. Well, I don't know whether you were living in the 1920s, but, you know, television stations, to a penny, set them up. So you close them down, you'll have more than you bargained for. But on top of that, why don't the Spanish government set up their own Spanish TV station?
Well, they have.
To do it in opposition. No, I know they have it nationally, but I'm talking about specifically for Catalonia.
Andreas.
Okay, with regards to the television, the TV3, which is called in Catalonia, it's a public television that's paid by the taxpayer. So
from
Catalonia, yes, but they have to have a balanced view. We've got a 50-50 population here.
Catalonia, not the Spanish government.
No, but you have to preserve the neutrality of.
So who controls the Spanish economy that pays for the TV? Is it the Catalonian government? It is. So they'll decide what goes on.
Andreas.
In terms of the education, you should see the school books that they show the kids now. They've taken away the figure of the king, they've taken away the figure of parliament in Madrid, and they start with the president of the regional community and their parliament and their set of rules, which is called the statute. That is where they're teaching children where the country starts, the administration starts. That is quite bad. In terms of the language, to be honest, it doesn't matter to me because I'm bilingual, so one or the other is fine. But I am bilingual because the education I had was both in Catalan and Spanish. Now the kids are struggling to speak Spanish, the younger kids, because all they do is teach them in Catalan. But I don't mind that. A language is a language. I mean, you can't.
We're going to go live to the lines, 952 78 4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, you're live on TRE.
With Sharon and Andres. I have in-laws that are Catalans. They don't want the independence. If Catalonia gets independence, the Basques will want it. Galicia, Asturias, Valencia. Spain would be like Yugoslavia. It won't be a country anymore. If they did do that, if the Catalans did get the independence, I would put a customs, aranceles, and everything that was imported from Spain, I'd have to pay for it, even if it was a tomato. And then that might put the rest of the people off, of the other regions. And the one that has to be blamed for this was the President Adolfo Suarez, who gave permission for the autonomy. That's what started it all. That was the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you for your calling. I'm going to go to the WhatsApp, which are very, very busy. Very, very busy indeed. This is from on the WhatsApp, which is +34645996795. From Pauline saying, a vote in Spain, all Spaniards have the same rights to vote, not just the regionals. Politicians in prison for rebellion, appropriation of public funds, inciting violence, trade is down. Even nationals from other regions avoid holidays in Catalonia. Cruise ships divert to Cartagena. Unfortunately, my families and friends in the region are at loggerheads. Disgraceful behavior by the regional politicians paid by the central government. I too have lived in the region. No longer a comfortable place to be. Bravo, Andres. Miguel says the transition Española was exemplary because it was made from the law to the law. Richard says, what is Alf on about? The UK is not in the EU solely for trade purposes, otherwise it might as well be joined as an EEA member. The Council of Ministers, which votes on every piece of EU legislation, Britain was on the winning side 86.7% of the time. Britain almost always wins votes through finding common ground with other countries. And from Mr. Grumpy, who says, was that Alpha Parole Officer? Was that Alpha Parole Officer? He never lets anyone finish a sentence.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Listen to Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe, always live, always lively with Viewpoint, this Tuesday morning being no exception. 952-784-4000, studio at tre.radio, the email, Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe official, if you wish to leave a post, and you can WhatsApp us on +34645996795. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, Alf Brewer, and Charlie Mullins. Yes, I do read the emails, but I'm trying to do about five different things at the same time. It's like trying to fly a helicopter around your living room. So anyway, back to the emails. Spain has a diversity in its different provinces. There is beauty in diversity, but in Spain it goes too far. It is diversive. One province working against another. In Murcia, very poor, only €1,300 per head population. Public services in Madrid and Catalonia, €3,000 per head. Also, water in Catalonia and north not sent to Murcia for fear of competition growing fruit and veg. Spain has to change. Going to the emails. Here we go. Yeah, that's from Robert saying I don't really read the emails. Yes, I do read the emails. That's why I'm reading them now. And also Gino says, Catalonia is a completely polarized society. Barcelona, especially Tarragona, want to remain, whereas the countryside wants to separate. Where does this stop? Is Marbella going to become an independent state? Are we going to have 3,000 states in a united Europe? Alf?
Mine is more of a plug about how the expats, or I can't stand that word, how us immigrants, British immigrants, can actually have a participation level which could affect what goes on. Next year is the Spanish local elections, and people who live here, who are residents, can have a vote. Unfortunately, it's never explained that well what you have to do. It's no use just being on the padrón, which a lot are, because you get your discounts for your bazaar and etc., etc. It's about you have to sign on to get your electoral papers. The system itself isn't that difficult. It's a voting proportional representation based on a list. So it's quite easy to do. But if you don't register before the new year, i.e. you've got until December, then you can't have a vote anyway. So this is a plug to everybody. Anybody who's interested in politics, anybody who's interested in where they live, anybody who understands that politics affects their life, get yourself on the electoral list so you can have a vote next year in the Spanish local elections. You know, and I can tell you, I speak to PSOE, obviously, but all of the parties want you to participate. Voting is so, you know, low in local elections. 50 votes can change the makeup of a council. You just have to read the papers, the British papers, to say how many of them are hung councils, etc., etc.
Right, then let's move on away just quickly because we're into the last 5 minutes or so.
Mr. Michael Senker. Michael Senker, if you want me to cut you off, ring in.
Right then. There you go then. Blimey, it's like being on WWF when they do out challenges, isn't it? It's like, you know, shouting out challenges to each other over the phones. We try and keep things clean. Into the last 5 minutes. We were going to get through the show without mentioning Donald Trump, but we can't because it's been a busy week for him. An aggressive effort is being made to stem the perceived crisis of authority affecting the presidency. With midterm elections looming, he's facing new questions about his fitness for office, and he's hunting a rebel, hidden rebel, within his own camp. As well as that, he hit out at Bob Woodward's new book, which, along with an op-ed by an anonymous senior official in the, quote, failing, unquote, New York Times, presents a devastating picture of his performance. Panel, your thoughts on another exciting week in the Trump presidency. Andreas?
Yeah, I read a bit of this new book, what's been published.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's true, because that's the image that the guy portrays to the world. I think he's improvising. I think he changes his mind regularly. I wouldn't be surprised if the White House was a complete mess, because that's the image he portrays. Whether it's true or not, I wouldn't know. But to me, that's what the image that he portrays, as I say.
Alf, any thoughts on...
I have lots and lots of thoughts about Trump, but
Charlie, come in with his thoughts on where. Yeah. I mean, as a business person, Donald Trump selling trade deals. He seems to be a different style of presidency than we've seen before.
That's right. Well, I mean, you know, he's completely off the rails, and I think if his personal life is anything to go by, then, you know, why would you put an idiot like that in charge of the country?
Right then, we've got a caller, as I thought we probably would do. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. Peter.
Morning, Peter. We've got 3 minutes.
Yep, briefly before we go off air, I hope when Steve Bannon's documentary is released on Wednesday, it'll get as much coverage as an anonymous person, where this person spent an awful long time right alongside Trump, and he's given his side of the story.
For those of those who don't know, what is Steve Bannon's documentary going to be about?
It's The War on Trump, I think it's called, and it'll show exactly what Trump has been up against and since the day he went into office. And I think as a journalist yourself, I think you can see from that, as I said, I don't watch the news, but I've looked at some forensic linguists and they've broken that down, and it's pretty much written by a group of people. Mm. As you know, as a journalist, everything's written in all paragraphs or singular sentences and things like that. But they broke it down and it's rubbish. And it's, again, a political coup. But like I said, I very much doubt if Bannon will get as much coverage next week.
Just a quick one. I mean, as you know, because, you know, we don't always sing off the same hymn sheet, and that's great because we're viewpoint. But I mean, to put an editorial like that into the public domain and not have the courage of your convictions to come out and do it independently, say, well, we are a fifth, you know, we are quietly working behind the scenes. You know, it smacks of... I mean, Trump said there's no backbone, they're cowardice, and he called it almost treasonable, which may be going too far. But
I don't know, because, I mean, he's been accused of treason for far less. But you're exactly right. And it's also national security. And the man or the woman or the people need to be rooted out. But if you watch Bannon, I've seen some preamble. He basically says this is what hangs over from the Bush administration, and this is what they are doing. They are trying to hide stuff from him, not because they think he's nuts, it's because they do not want someone like him in power. They all bought into the big Chinese revolution. They're all backing the Chinese revolution. All the money, all the governments, they're backing it. They told him it was inevitable, and he's a disruptor, and he's come in and said, no way, not on my watch. and he spooked them. And that's you know, and if he declassifies these Pfizers in the next week, the Kafka could really hit the fan, I believe. So we'll wait on that.
The Kafka or the Kaka was that? I know it was the Kaka, but I just thought the idea of the Kafka hitting the fan would be quite something.
No, not the Kafka.
Peter, we'll look forward to that. Obviously, I'll look forward to seeing the Steve Bannon documentary. We'll probably speak about that next week. Thanks for the call in.
Thank you.
Right, almost out of time. It's been our pleasure and our privilege to bring you the past 2 hours of Viewpoint. Just a quiet last thought from Ken in Wickler, who said, Alf still had to go at Mr. Grumpy, ha-ha, from Ken. My thanks, however, to my guests, as always. Andres Gallardo, thank you for your input today, Andres.
Thank you, Giles.
Shy of retiring Alf, as always.
Yeah, and we didn't even get to speak about the Swedish election.
We didn't get the Swedish elections, but we'll see what we can do next time. And Charlie, thanks for coming in. Good to have you live in the studio. Back to the UK and back for more second referendum, all people's vote, or they'll just stole the thing from you?
Oh, no, it's going to continue and we're fighting it very hard. So, you know, I think it's going to be an important time next couple of weeks. And, you know, I'm going to disagree with Alf. You know, Alf doesn't think because it's fraud and criminal that... They can get away with it.
If you disagree with Alf, you're in pretty good company, as most of the known universities do as well. This has been Viewpoint. Stephen Ritson, up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.